Hello and welcome to the PostStatus Draft Podcast, the official podcast for PostStatus, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, I'm excited we have a special episode with the WordPress co-founder and Automattic CEO, Matt Mullenweg. We're right on the verge of WordPress 4.9 and WordCamp US coming up. So Matt and I talked about kind of all things WordPress from a big vision point of view down to some of the details of different things happening in the world right now. It was kind of Matt to join me for this episode, and I think you'll really enjoy it. If you enjoy this podcast, you can get more news and analysis from the PostStatus Club. Check out our current club members, site partners, and join on our website at poststatus.com/club. Today, I want to feature one of our partners, Gravity Forms. Gravity Forms makes form building easy with WordPress. I've used Gravity Forms as long as I've been involved in WordPress, pretty much, and it's a no-brainer renewal every single year. Integrate all sorts of awesome extensions through your Gravity Forms dashboard. You can do PayPal, MailChimp, Stripe, Basecamp, all sorts of things. Gravity Forms is super awesome. I don't think I need to say too much more than that. I hope you already have a license for Gravity Forms. If you don't, you need one today. GravityForms.com. Thanks for checking it out, and thanks for Gravity Forms for being a PostStatus partner. Now, here's our show. Hello, and welcome to the PostStatus Draft Podcast. I'm happy to be back, and we have a special guest today after our hiatus, so might as well come back with a fury. I've got Matt Mullenweg, the co-founder of WordPress and the CEO of Automattic. Hey, Matt.
Howdy, howdy. Don't call it a comeback.
thanks for being here with me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
When this publishes, WordPress 4.9 will be on the way out the door. Of course, 4.9 has had a lot of active development, but it's been simultaneously with the feature projects agenda, first and foremost, the new editor. So I guess my first question is, how has that process been in terms of balancing a release like 4.9, which does have some significant features attached to it, and balancing that with a big project like the Gutenberg editor?
Well, luckily, I mean, Weston, Mel, all the contributors there have been doing a really fantastic job this year, getting in some concrete and useful improvements to the WordPress experience that are going to make a big difference for people. And the thing is that we can do them. We can do them today. And so there's no point forcing people to wait or delaying improvements for some theoretical better thing, you know, at an indeterminate period down the road, when there's ways we can make millions of people's lives better today. So, I mean, the features, I know that some have been controversial, like around the code editing and stuff like that. Like, people have different perceptions of who and what WordPress is for and what WordPress should do and should not do. But we try to build a big tent. And I think that for the people that these features touch, it's going to make WordPress a lot more accessible.
Yeah, I'm actually long a proponent of being in that camp. And to a degree, my personal opinion has long been, and someone dug up a comment actually where I said this, that I would rather it not exist, the file editor in WordPress, but if it did exist, to have some safety mechanisms to prevent people from white screening their site and not being able to access it. So I am, if it's determined we're going to keep it, then I am glad that that exists. So I think that's a really good thing. So the 4.9 release is going to go out. It seems like we always have a release soon before WordCamp US. what's the thing that you're most excited about between 4.9 and, I know we'll get to Gutenberg in a minute, but it really seems to me like a site owner style release. And that's something that we don't always have a ton of features for. Like a lot of behind the scenes stuff tends to exist. Was this a strategic thing or just features that popped up in the queue?
It's definitely been a lot of strategic planning this year. Gutenberg, I mean, a common misconception about Gutenberg is it's just the editor. And even you said, how's the editor work going? And Gutenberg's really about introducing this concept of blocks that can simplify the WordPress experience throughout things. And it's going to cover writing, editing, and customization. But since the customization is kind of the after we do the writing part, we wanted to make sure that we got some good customization improvements in the meantime. You know, design drafts, I think, are going to be pretty huge. Locking and scheduling, the front-end preview links. Like, I mean, there's some really, really cool stuff in here. You can call it site builders, and it's good to have that persona in mind, perhaps. But, I mean, the thing is that WordPress has always shown that you can build something for a specific persona or a specific type of person. And what ends up happening is it benefits almost everyone, at least at some point in their WordPress journey.
I mean, it seems it was an adaptation from the original plan, though, right? Because, I mean, last time we talked about a year ago about this, it was, you know, there's not a release. We're doing these core projects, but then we've had two releases since then. So what evolved your thinking, I guess, in terms of why we needed to have a release simultaneous with the feature projects?
Oh, from the very beginning, I was talking, particularly with Mel, and brainstorming like, okay, we know that Gutenberg's going to take the better part of a year. So what can we do in the meantime that'll make people's lives better? And I had that conversation with a number of different developers. I just remember the one with Mel in particular, because it was a very fruitful one. But that's been, kind of from last year's contributor days when we announced the changes at WordCamp US about the release model. I didn't want to be trying to get timeline. I didn't want it to be timeline driven. So although we've kind of had two releases this year on like a normal schedule, like they've been when things are ready more feature driven rather than being time driven. So that's been, I think, an all right change. If we were feature driven and hadn't had any releases, I would be a little bit worried.
Yeah.
Because it probably means we're not controlling scope or something like that.
Do you think contributors to what we consider like more normal releases, so like the things that are in 4.9 versus Gutenberg, do you think they feel empowered? Or do you think that it's been a challenge to manage where that developer commitment goes and how to encourage them, but also keep the focus on Gutenberg?
It's definitely a challenge. And I have had some tough conversations with folks essentially saying no to things. But we've also shown with 4.8 and 4.9 that there's a lot that falls under REST Customizer and Editor that can happen. So it's been kind of, I don't know if it's been that much different from what previous release leads have found, because I haven't done it in a few years. So
how's that been for you, getting back into the day-to-day side of leading releases? Has it been a rewarding experience or more challenging than it was historically, or what?
Well, I love geeking out on WordPress, so being able to carve out more of my day to just read Slack channels and dev notes and chain sets and everything, I found personally enjoyable. Yeah, that's just something I like. But I would say that to this end, it's been successful. It's been really the folks involved. Like a big part of my leadership style at this point in my career is empowering people and trying to set people up with the autonomy, vision, and the skills to succeed, and then remove blockers for them when they run into them. So that is ongoing, but I think that we have a very, very good start for that with kind of the preponderance of contributions happening in both the 4.8 and 4.9 releases, but also if you look at how far Gutenberg's come and just the speed of that development process, it's been unlike anything we've really had in WordPress's history since the days when it was just a couple of us working on it.
How do you think the role of a developer has evolved? I'm sorry, of a designer has evolved in terms of WordPress core development? Last year, you announced Mel and Michael Aristad as core committers. But how much has the design led the process versus been responsive to the process this time around?
Well, that's part of why for each focus, I want a design person at equal standing with the development lead. And so we've had, so far this year, I believe Johan, Tammy, and Mel in those roles on the editor and customization side. So I think it's been really good. maybe I'm a little biased there, but I hope that we never move away from this in future development.
Has it been similar to the, because my assumption, and this is based on some limited knowledge of prior WordPress.com projects, has it been a little bit of sharing processes from the automatic side of things into the WordPress side of things, or how has that worked in terms of how this kind of process was informed?
It's a little bit different because the design lead role, well, we don't have like strict hierarchy or reporting structures on the .org side. Because of that, we really only have this one bit we can flip, which is like lead or not lead. And so I thought it was very important for a designer to have that lead bit flipped and have that be at equal standing with the development focus lead. At Automattic, it's more, you know, cross-functional teams, and the designer it might be a lead, but just as often as not. And but because the teams are relatively tight-knit, you know, generally 5 to 10 people, and they work pretty closely, and there's kind of the hierarchy around leading up eventually to me ensures that there's alignment and vision and everything like that. So because of the structure being so different, it kind of necessitates a different both titles, roles, and functionality and process. So maybe inspired by some of the things that have gone well, projects I've been involved in outside of Core WordPress, including Automattic, but not necessarily marrying them.
Do you think Gutenberg's been the largest scoped WordPress-centric project that you've been involved in?
I mean, we've done some big stuff in the past, like creating themes or plugins.
Yeah.
Like, so I don't know if it's the biggest, but it's probably one of the biggest since then. In a lot of ways, I think of it from the point of view of this is a foundational change that will enable like a Cambrian explosion of things to be built on top of it, much in the same way that custom post types, themes, plugins, the plugin directory, like that sort of stuff, auto updates, like they're so foundational that they really power us. It's a wind in our sails for many years to come. And blocks can be that foundation, I would say, even for the coming decade.
Yeah, has that been a challenge to try to think of how the web will be used a decade from now and knowing that the decisions made today are going to be impacting how the web is written, at least the content produced and that kind of stuff in the future?
I think it's better to think of it from the point of view of a user, because in WordPress's history, the sort of output format has changed a ton, you know, from back in the day, HTML to XHTML to, you know, producing many different varieties of formats of RSS and different feeds. These days, it's all about AMP and instant articles and canonical AMP and progressive web apps. And like the sort of, that's the beauty of WordPress, that we have kind of this content structure and a way that people use the software to publish. And then actually changing what it publishes to is the easiest part. And that's probably the thing I'm least worried about in terms of how we'll be able to adapt WordPress to how the web's going to change in the future. Like maybe in 5 years, every theme is effectively like canonical AMP. And that's like how we do things. But, you know, it doesn't really matter because those are kind of just templates in a lot of ways. What really matters is the data structure and how people interact with it.
What role did the React decision and blog post that you wrote play into that in that thinking?
Which thinking?
Well, the choosing to remove React and then, of course, Facebook changing their license. Do you think, first of all, I guess, do you think that your blog post had a part in that decision from Facebook?
I wouldn't say it was the blog post, but definitely the conversation that blog post kicked off. You know, it was on the basically every tech site wrote about it, the homepage of every developer group, you know, Hacker News, Reddit, et cetera. It was everywhere. So to the extent that the post was able to get a larger conversation, yeah, I think it did have an influence. But nothing was in the post that hadn't been said before to people at Facebook or otherwise. So I wouldn't call it the content of the post that really changed things.
But you didn't immediately reverse the conversation and say, okay, great, now we'll fully endorse React as this platform. Why was that? Why did you continue to kind of let folks explore how this would be done and not settle on React again to, I guess, catch up the timeline? Because that was introducing a significant delay in a project that you were extremely passionate about.
Yeah, and actually, it was kind of funny. I've been growing a beard.
Congratulations, I can't do that.
Well, the idea was I don't want to shave it until Gutenberg ships. And so my friends call it the Gutenbeard. And nice. It's getting kind of wild. I've actually had, like, I got a haircut and they kind of trimmed it a little bit accidentally. So it's not like 100% since then, but I was like, ah, Zuckerberg, this is going to add like a couple inches to this Gutenbeard. And I'm really kind of ready for it to to go. But I did do a post immediately after Facebook changed their decision, or within a day or two, that said, now I can, licensing-wise, there's nothing blocking us anymore. And the kind of patent-free thing, you know, like I said, it's not our fight to fight, and we don't have to fight it anymore now that they've removed that clause. I think what was really interesting about that whole process and kind of lead up to it and afterwards is it got the WordPress JavaScript community engaged directly with the founders and leaders and developers of React, Vue, Preact. Like, you probably saw that weekly JavaScript hangout chat where all of the leaders were there.
That was amazing. The number of people that showed up and their, I guess, relative interest and a lack of selfishness, I guess, to a degree. Like, they didn't want necessarily to WordPress to choose their framework just because, but I feel like they really engaged honestly about where their frameworks fit in and how they think it might be beneficial. I think that was a really awesome conversation. And it'd be, to me, that felt like a situation where WordPress or you as the project lead were kind of throwing our weight around a little bit in a good way. And it really brought some fruitful discussions around. So I was really happy to see that. And I think I hope that will encourage maybe future similar types of situations. Is that something that you would be comfortable with?
Well, that's the beauty of it, is it's now an ongoing thing, not just a one-off. And I just want to highlight and take a moment to recognize that in about 8 months, we went from where the most sophisticated JavaScript in WordPress was really jQuery. And we were regarded as, you know, kind of a backwater from the JavaScript point of view, to where we now have some incredibly sophisticated, best in the world open source JavaScript happening and engaged with the brightest minds and leaders there as well. So, I mean, that was one of the things I was really hoping for. It's gone beyond my hopes and dreams. And I'm excited to see that continue because, as I started saying a few years ago, like, the future of WP Admin is JavaScript plus APIs. And that's the future of plugins. It's the future of, I think, how web applications are going to exist. And that is something where, you know, earlier you talked about how's the web going to change. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not so worried about what WordPress outputs, right? We're a content management system. We can output lots of different stuff. But the way that you interact with WordPress, I am 100% certain, cannot be the kind of PHP-generated, you know, HTML mixed in with all the, basically how it works today. It needs to be a rich JavaScript application.
Do you still think there's a lot of work in terms of recruiting quality JavaScript developers to work on WordPress?
Oh yeah, but you know, the industry's also kind of on our side there. It's been interesting from Automattic's point of view is we're at a point right now where from a hiring pipeline, we have so many more people in the JavaScript pipeline than on the PHP side. To the fact where we're having to go back and like really do some specific recruiting on the PHP, what we call the code wrangler role, because we're kind of the most behind there we've been since Automattic started. So it's a complete reversal.
Yeah, I was about to say that's the opposite of what I would have anticipated. Has it been difficult to educate existing JavaScript developers that have preconceived notions of WordPress? Because, you know, sometimes when I talk to developers that are from outside our ecosystem, they're like, no, you know, like there's not interesting things happening there. And I have to explain like, well, this is what we're going to, is that an education process for y'all? Or do you think that it's getting around better that WordPress is more than PHP?
It's starting to get around better. And I think on the Automattic side, Calypso, and on the WordPress side, Gutenberg have helped that a lot. I mean, we were at the center of one of the big JavaScript discussions this year, which was the React thing. Okay. And why does that matter? Why does Gutenberg matter? You know, I think that I would not be surprised if Gutenberg gets adopted by other CMSs and down the line.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And, do you think it is the plan for it to be that portable?
We're not building it for that goal. I mean, we're building it for WordPress. But we're definitely keeping in mind that we want Gutenberg embedded in a few different places. You know, there's a project going on right now to embed Gutenberg in P2, which is
that's cool.
You know, what we use a lot of Automattic. And basically any place that we...
Is it going to be called O2 or is it going to stay P2?
You know, we kind of switched it back to P2 because O2 is like a huge mobile company in the UK.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Where P2 is usually just the second floor of most parking lots. So there's less less sort of an infringement or potential overlap there. So B2 is the theme name. I think O2 is like the framework, and then we have something called Breathe, which is I forget the exact interaction between the theme and the plugin, but let's call it P2 for the sake of argument.
One of the things I talk about whenever I talk about WordPress in person is the simplicity of WordPress and the importance for that simplicity while maintaining those developer features. I think P2 is an interesting example of that because to me, and I think we share this vision, like one of the big threats to the web is this closed offness of the web. But historically, the experience for something self-hosted has just not been very good. Like WordPress is kind of the best of the bunch. And like you're kind of talking about, isn't good enough anymore. Do you think that's something that's addressable? Like, can WordPress be someone's data store where they own all those things and they pipe it out to other places and that's a convincing argument? Or do you think there needs to be like a catalyst to make that happen?
All right, so your argument is that WordPress is simple and we need to make
it? No.
Oh, it's not.
I'm saying it's not simple, but the challenge is to make it simpler, like make it as attractive. Like I publish photos on Instagram a lot. And those a lot of times don't make it to my blog, for instance. So like, can we make WordPress simple enough and just as attractive to use as say Instagram or Twitter or something like that, where then you talked about Canonical AMP, where you have a canonical source for your own digital life, and that WordPress can be competitive in that realm?
I think simple is a red herring and not something that I think I've ever aspired to. And especially now that, you know, I read more and learn more, I would way more go for, say, intuitive than simple.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the worry is that when we go towards simple, we tend to make things simplistic, overly reductive. Because often we're perceiving we have our bias of why we think something works or doesn't. In some way, like think of something like a child learning to speak or learning to walk. That's not simple at all, right?
Sure.
We can't even teach robots to do it, despite, you know, some of the best minds in the world to work on it. But every one of us has done it. Every single human listening to this and understanding what we're saying figured that out. So there's complexity, and I think that we can create something that is intuitive and sort of has paths which people find easy to walk down towards the goals and things that we want people to be able to do with WordPress. At the same time, people will do things with WordPress that we never ever anticipated. Or maybe even don't endorse. We say, wait, it's doing a little too much in WordPress.
You say path, that's a little bit of a throwback to a social network that was probably ahead of its time in terms of being intuitive but complex. Yes.
And it's really good to look at. Like Instagram is not just the features of posting, right? Because there's 1,000 other apps that have copied that. It's also the network and the curation. And the hosting speed, and like there's dozens and dozens of things besides just the interface and how you post or not that influence why that's been successful. And I think
that's part
true
of my
WordPress
question
as well.
Is whether you think WordPress can play a role there to kind of a mass market. Like, do you think WordPress can be as desirable to download, say, from an app store? Let's just imagine the desktop doesn't even matter. Download from an app store, use and maintain your digital life and what you publicize through something like WordPress to make that argument that we own that material and it's important for us to own it versus give that up to the Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and then pipe what we want to share to a specific network. Or is there a future where you think something more broad-based, open web could be the network?
Yes. I believe that, you know, kind of what you describe is 100% attainable. And when we do it, I think that we'll have accomplished something very meaningful on the way to our lifelong mission of democratizing publishing.
So we have a long journey ahead in the WordPress world then.
Well, it wouldn't be exciting if it's not. Like, I'm planning to work on WordPress the rest of my life. And so the scope of, or the our capacity to reach more people and affect the world in the way that we imagine the world should be, I think we'll be able to expand over time if we remain responsive to the changes that are happening, if we don't get too locked up in how things have happened before being the primary guideline for how we do things in the future, and if we stay humble.
Do you think staleness is a significant threat to WordPress?
I prefer the term ossification.
Okay, can you help me with that?
Sure. It's the idea that something works and then it doesn't become stale, because if you think of the analogy of stale, that's like it's not good anymore, right? Like stale bread. But
feature complete.
Yeah, but think of maybe like bones that become brittle. You know, if the bone was never there in the first place, you wouldn't be good. But at some point, it can become too inflexible or brittle, and then it can break.
Let's shift into some other things that you work on and Automattic works on, but impact both sides of the WordPress world. WooCommerce and Jetpack are two huge teams within Automattic and also influencers on the broader WordPress project. Let's start with WooCommerce. And what challenges are you facing with WooCommerce? You once, I think around the time of the acquisition of WooThemes and WooCommerce, you compared it to WordPress 1.5. So do you have an update on what version of WordPress WooCommerce is at now and what challenges you're facing in terms of making it what you want it to be?
It's probably like a 2.7 now. So, I mean, the idea with that was to evolve it faster than WordPress itself evolved. And I think we definitely can. Challenge, I mean, WooCommerce is very exciting right now because, as you know, the marketplace is opening up. They just had their WooConf. There's been some huge strides in terms of making kind of the setup for WooCommerce easier, and then bringing in and integrating the services around things like shipping, payments, taxes, all that sort of jazz that that we found is really significant barriers for people setting up WooCommerce.
Some of those are powered through WordPress.com and actually require Jetpack to operate, right?
Yeah, we're putting in some SaaS services there.
Is that a part of how you see the future of WooCommerce working in terms of how y'all monetize it? Like, are you looking at, I mean, Shopify, for example, is a constantly talked about in terms of kind of a leader in the e-commerce space. I had somebody speak at the conference that I put on about e-commerce, and his take on it certainly was that for small and medium-sized stores, Shopify is doing a lot right. So are you learning from Shopify in terms of the direction of WooCommerce, or what do you think WooCommerce can do to stand out in a world where Shopify is doing really well?
I think it's good to think broadly. So Shopify doesn't just compete with Woo. It actually competes with WordPress. And they are, I would say, probably our best competitor we've had. I put them in like one of the top five, maybe top three.
Of WordPress competitors.
Yeah, for sure. They're doing a great job. And yeah, I have a tremendous amount of respect for them as a company as well. I feel like they're doing it right as well. So I have a lot of respect. So what Shopify shows is that there's a demand for this in the world. And I do think they do a good job helping people get started and making that process smooth. A lot of those key features are because they're a centrally hosted SaaS service. Much in the same way that it's much easier to provide like a news feed or a distribution when you're a central social network versus a distributed one, right? For WooCommerce, though, I think that it's very interesting to see how the commercial side of it changes how the community interacts. And, you know, you asked, is our monetization plan there SaaS services or plugins or things? I mean, the plan is really to help as many people sell as much stuff as possible. You know, if there's 5 or 6 billion in GMV going through WooCommerce today, like when we get that to 50 billion, everyone's business providing WooCommerce stuff will do well. The host will do well, Automatic will do well, plugin developers will do well. So I worry more about kind of growing that success metric of people who are getting started with selling things and then selling a bunch of it than I do necessarily like what particular monetization makes most sense along the way.
Hmm. Do you think there's a future where hosted WooCommerce is a thing that Automatic does and offers through Pressable or whatever else?
Well, you can do that through Pressable or WordPress.com business today. So we are currently offering it.
Is Pressable basically a WordPress.com business now?
No, they're different, but it's not incorrect to say that they have some similar ideas and inspirations and infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. I guess it gets a little confusing in terms of how to differentiate where WordPress.com ends and where WordPress.org begins, sometimes in terms of how Automatic is approaching it.
Well, I think a good way to think of it is now on WordPress.com, you can have the path from that free, never pay a penny user, and there's, you know, over 100 million of those, all the way up to you can install custom code and plugins and themes, and that's supported and scalable in the same way the rest of WordPress.com is. That's a pretty big change. There's never been anything like that before.
Historically, y'all have had essentially a pipeline where you had hosting partners that you worked with to help people get to .org once they were ready. Is that something that's caused friction in the sense that now Pressable is essentially right there and like a quick step for a WordPress.com user?
Pressable is more of a test bed for us. For WordPress.com business, there's definitely maybe a little bit more direct, although its pricing point is much higher than most web hosts. But our philosophy, I mean, you can make that same argument for WordPress.com going back 12 years. We now have over a decade of our strategy, which is both make some really great solutions and partner with lots of other good people and make their solutions as good as possible. It's a multi-billion dollar market even today. And so there's lots of room for everyone. And much like, say, Google with Android, like we'll make some phones, but we'll also make it so lots and lots of other people can make their version of it as well. And I could understand someone being skeptical, but we've been doing it for more than a decade now. So we plan to continue that for many years to come. And Jetpack, which I guess is the second part of your question, is really the cornerstone there.
Do you think, is there still a lot of shared interest between hosts and partnerships through Jetpack? Like, have y'all had success with your hosting partners who are using and installing Jetpack for their customers? It seems like there may be times where there might be some battles over who's going to do what and, you know, how they promote that. Because, for example, like Jetpack, you might be able to buy a theme or install a theme or something like that. And that might be a line of business that the hosting partner was also utilizing.
Yeah, it's true. Although most hosting partners, that's a pretty small line of business. Like it's in single digit millions, where their entire business is probably in 3-digit millions. So I would say that, you know, the thing that we see and why there's increasing demand for Jetpack with host is we have real data that shows that when a site, particularly a new site, activates Jetpack, their churn is way, 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 way lower.
The host's churn.
Yeah, the host churn. Sometimes over 40% lower. So that translates very, very much into the bottom line. Like you talk to any of these subscription businesses, churn is the number one thing. So like exactly what feature or functionality is it in Jetpack that does that? I mean, I don't know that yet, but I do know it has a very, very real impact. And that translates to, for some partners, tens of millions of dollars in revenue that they would be losing that they're not because they're getting folks running Jetpack. So as long as that continues, I think that Jetpack is a very, very long and fruitful road ahead with every single web host in the world. And, you know, to our commitment to it, you can see both with, we have as many people working on Jetpack and WooCommerce as the rest of WordPress.com. So it shows, like, if Automatic were only interested in sort of WordPress.com business, all of this functionality and features would just be on WordPress.com. But we build it in a way that's, in many ways, core first, and just like Gutenberg is. to make it available to everyone.
How's the WordPress.com side of things gone in terms of helping people become aware that you can build a real website, if you will, like a business website, a photography website? Basically, the market, Squarespace, has gone after extremely hard with marketing dollars, certainly. Has that been a challenge for y'all to present WordPress.com in that way? I mean, I know this year you started a advertising campaign really for the first time in a really significant way.
Kind of ever, yeah.
Yeah, how's that process? Other than Childish Gambino sponsorship.
That's going super well. So I think it's still a big challenge because people... I'll talk about an example from a photography event we were at a few weeks ago. We were at a different event around the same time. I forget exactly what it was, but call it like a more like mainstream person events, like Knitters or Genealogy or something like that. And The feedback was pretty universally positive. Like people were really excited to see WordPress was there and learn about it and hear about it. At this photography event, it was a lot of professional photographers, a lot of whom had tried WordPress at some point in the past 14 years, and many of whom weren't on it anymore. They'd had a bad experience. And this is one of those things where it kind of helps me get out of my head, where WordPress is the sum of the entirety of everything that someone can find when they Google WordPress. You know?
Yeah.
It's the commercial theme sites. It's the spam. It's the, you know, it's the everything that they come across when someone says WordPress. It's what their friends said. It's what their, you know, competitors use. It's everything. And we got some people there who said, hey, and again, they don't really distinguish, this was automatic presence event, but they don't even realize the difference between WordPress and Divi, you know? They say, hey,
right,
I spent this money on this theme. I paid you money and I couldn't get a refund and the support wasn't very good and things like that. And you know, it's really our collective responsibility to make sure that wherever someone ends up in the WordPress community, that they do get a good experience. And because every single actor in the WordPress community, whether that's the web host, whether it's a theme seller, whether it's a plugin seller, whether it's an agency, you know, you kind of think of all component parts, that reflects on WordPress as a whole.
Do you think there's a place for shared efforts in regards to public education? Because it's, in my opinion, a little unfair for, say, Automattic to, you know, do 95% of the direct spend WordPress marketing, although it's probably not 95% with players like GoDaddy and Bluehost now doing a lot as well. But like, is there a place for promoting WordPress generally where it's a shared burden, if you will, from interested parties?
I think so very much. And I also believe that we need to really evolve WordPress.org in this regard, because that is our shared space. It is kind of our repository for all this stuff. And I do think that in 2018, we'll need to make it just a much better website from the point of view of bringing in folks, educating, and helping people wherever they might be in their WordPress journey.
But right now, WordPress.org is technically your website and playground. I know there's a big team of people that manage it. But in terms of the way, say, other corporations or whatever interested parties may view it, would be that it's essentially yours. And like, how would you tell them, hey, come in here and let's promote WordPress together and let's do it collaboratively? Or is it a collaborative effort? Is it a top-down thing? Or how do you envision that?
Oh, I'm flattered you think that I do everything on WordPress.org, but
I'm not saying I think you do everything. I'm saying I think it's your website.
Sure, but so there's already, I would say, 50 to 100 people that work on WordPress.org pretty regularly, like on a weekly basis. What I would love to get is more of the organizations to think about. I think that people perceive that they can't change anything there. So I really want to open that up. And sometimes the volunteers for WordPress.org tell them that they can't change things. So we need to get past that. So I really want to make WordPress.org a product that people can contribute to, just like they might contribute to Core WordPress. And yes, there's still going to be an editorial vision. There'll still be something that some people want to do and we say no to, and there'll still be kind of a, we want it to be cohesive, but I want it to be, in perception and reality, much more open than it is today.
Currently on the .org, like the website .org side of things, and also the core software, sometimes data is something that a lot of people just don't have. I mean, maybe if you're a host and you're monitoring how your customers are using it, or if you're a plugin and someone has opted into allowing you to track what they do. But in a lot of ways, on the WordPress.org website, you are the only person really that with access to data that could maybe inform decisions. And then in the software itself, there's been the telemetry outcry that you've mostly resisted, I feel like it's safe to say. So I'd like to address these separately. Maybe let's start with telemetry because that one's pretty interesting. Why is it that you don't want to see that, I guess?
I don't think I've ever said that I don't want to see it. no, it's true. And so data is not a panacea, right? It's not a cure-all that'll solve all of our problems. And in fact, it is kind of a Pandora's box sometimes, where you open it up and it creates more questions. Or worst of all, you can have a false confidence from, you know, data or your interpretation of data that in fact leads you down an incorrect path. So data is one of, you know, a suite of things, a whole toolbox of things that you can use to apply to what we try to do, which is extremely difficult and as much art as science, which is like make things that people want, build it and deliver it to them. In terms of telemetry in WordPress, I'm a little bit more on like, call it the European side of like data privacy and wanting to not gather something that we're not going to need to use to make a decision.
For what it's worth on that side of things, I 100% agree. I actually think that if data, this is maybe, I don't know if you agree with this part, if data is going to be used and shared, I think it's a great place for hosts to be a big contributor.
Yeah.
Is that something that you'd agree with, or you just would rather that data not really mess with the conversation?
Well, I think the nice thing about any host, including automatic helping here, is that we can use it to answer a question versus just constantly kind of, certainly at WordPress.org level, collecting just kind of everything. So I'm a believer in like collect as little as possible to minimize kind of your exposure to having too much data. Because data is, I think someone called it like the nuclear waste of our day, right? Like once you have it, like storing it, protecting it, making sure it ages gracefully. I mean, all of those things become, there's a lot of cost to it. And if you haven't, I now have experience storing and maintaining and being responsible for many petabytes of data. and that's a non-trivial thing to take on.
But there's got to be useful data being collected, because if you look at the GoDaddy onboarding process, the WordPress.com one, I'm sure the Pressable one, the Bluehost,
the Jetpack one, you know, yeah, definitely
the Jetpack one. There's onboarding processes that are at least partially informed by data, and I guess part of my question is: do you think there's room for that data to become more public so that WordPress Core could maybe have a better onboarding process? This was a new user experience thing that kind of kicked off the ground once and pretty much fell down. But it's, I don't know. Personally, I'm a little concerned about it not being addressed from the core side of things, if that makes sense.
There is never a decision made in core that's not data informed in some way. The problem is that when people disagree with decisions, they say, they try to make it purely like data was the only decider, or that if they had data, they could overrule decision or something like that. And that's just not how data works. Like I said, it's not, it should never be the sole driver of a decision. So, I mean, there's just, we're really talking about product design. And this is such a meaty and large topic that it's almost tough to know exactly where to start.
Sure.
For, you know, in terms of like other things that have been attempted in the past for Core WordPress, like I wouldn't attribute their failure to lack of data. I would attribute to, you know, poor product or project management more often than not. We've definitely found there's, if you said we need to know, let's just say like there was something in WordPress and we need to know whether you preferred your favorite color was blue or red. And we need to make a decision based on whether people choose blue or red. This is a silly example, but you can kind of map this to almost anything that people talk about with telemetry. That if we knew what people were doing or wanted, that we could make a better default decision or we would change the product in some way. Once you get the question really concrete, I think that you begin to see that, you know, built-in telemetry to WordPress is one of 100 ways to get that answer and get that feedback, and actually a really, really one with a lot of downsides, and that would require a ton of work, like somewhere between 6 and 12 months of work to answer this question that you might be able to answer in just a couple of days a different way, including doing user testing, surveys, looking at web posts, looking at plugins. You know, like there's just a lot of different ways to answer these questions. And so that's why I like to bring it back to the question that we want to answer and specifically what we want to do as a result of that. So then it becomes more about results, not necessarily a preconceived process or input. And, you know, some people say, oh, I've built amazing things before and we need this data. And it's like, okay, well, we have lots of people involved that have built amazing things before. And let's look at like what we're trying to solve and then map out the best way from A to B, because there's not one size fits all for every problem. And just because you had success doing it, getting from A to B one way, doesn't mean that's the path that we can or should take today.
Last WordCamp US, you talked
about...
Can
I say one more thing on kind of WordPress.org please. And all that? There is data there. There's, I think, 25, 26 people with access to like the Google Analytics for WordPress.org. Again, if someone came to me and said, hey, I want to know to solve XYZ, I need to know ABC, that's data that's on WordPress.org, I'm happy to open that up. It just, you know, I, especially with Core WordPress, tend to be very privacy conscious and really want to protect, I think, what is the right assumption that people have with WordPress, that we are a project that cares about and tries to protect user privacy and gathers as little as we need to make the decisions that we find really important, and we'll continue to do so in the future.
Well, that's some. I didn't know that about the .org side of things. I know I think I've asked you about traffic before, and you said a lot. And then I've also inquired before. I think back when it was the theme marketplace, like how many people were clicking the banner for Creative Market and some of the other marketplaces that were on there, and there was a little resistance there. So if that data is more open now, then I know for certain myself and other people would be interested. So maybe we'll have to make a specific list of questions that we have curiosities about, or maybe that questions about how that data could be used in an informative way for the community and not just for nosy trade magazine runners.
And you're interesting because you span a few different things. You're a contributor and you're a journalist now, and you're a publisher. And so a question that you ask with your contributor hat on might be answered differently than the question you ask with your publisher or journalist hat on. If for either, talking about what your goal is a good one. So if you want to write an article that says this is changing things, or like put that in the request, and I think it'll be more likely to be answered in a way that you, or opened up in a way that you like.
I'm glad to hear that. So last WordCamp US, there was a effort announced, and I'm curious what kind of follow-through has been done. I'm just not aware of it, about the what was it, the marketing board or something along those lines, like a working group. Is that something that's evolved, or am I missing out on that?
Stay tuned.
Okay. And then I'll finish with this, which is, If there was, well, there's two. I want to follow up with something fun after this, but if there's.
Are we out of time already? Oh, my goodness.
We're getting close, yeah.
This really flew along.
You just love talking to me.
You know what, Brian? I really do love talking to you. I really enjoyed when we were on stage at WordCamp Europe a few years ago. I like being on the podcast, and so happy to do this again at some point.
Well, likewise, and I appreciate you doing it. If you could push a button and make something happen in the community, which I think we both know is a lot harder than pushing a button, what would that be? Like, if you could just have something be so, as you once told Otto during a talk, if you could just make it so, what would it be today that you're looking at and that you would like to see changed from a community perspective?
I would, if there were a button that could help people open their minds, that would be the button I'd push.
Could you expound on that a little bit?
Sure. You know, it's difficult in text-based interaction, which is the majority of what we do in Core, to really deeply understand a different point of view. And whenever there's change, there can be a lot of fear on how that change is going to impact you or your perception of yourself or your clients or how things are going to work or how it might create work for you. I mean, obviously, I'm talking around, but talking about a lot of what's been going on with Gutenberg lately. Mm-hmm. If we really, the point of view where you kind of give everyone the benefit of the doubt, assume good intents, and then really seek to understand something you disagree with, and then be open-minded to that changing. You know, it's really, really rare, especially in today's discourse and politics and everything in the U.S., but like, it's...
Another throwback to something we neither of us saw coming from a joke I think you made about when we were at WordCamp Europe. A lot of things have happened since then.
Oh, man, yeah.
To put it lightly.
Understatement of the year. But, yeah. You know, I'm a big fan of the idea of strong opinions loosely held. So... You know, I think this came up in comments the other day where someone was like, probably on the other big WordPress site, Tavern, but I talked about, oh, sorry. Are we not allowed to talk? You can edit that. Take it out of the post.
Okay.
You know, it was this idea that originally when Gutenberg started, I talked about getting it on 100,000 sites as a good kind of target, a stretch goal for us. And over the years, we've been developing and think about it, I realized that that was kind of, that missed something, which is like people posting with it. You know, so it doesn't matter if it's installed a bunch of places, if no one's using it. In fact, that would be really good to know if it's on 100,000 sites and those sites never made another post. Like that would be... Yeah.
That's interesting data.
That would be interesting data and probably point... that would definitely inform product decisions. And so I said, hey, we should probably add to this or maybe even make a primary goal, 100,000 posts made with Gutenberg. And folks came into the comments and said, oh, you're changing your mind. You're flip-flopping. Like, what's the...
Everybody hates flip-floppers.
Or this is scope creep or whatever it is. It's like, no, it's just like, I felt strongly about something before, been working on it, learning, reading, etc. The world has changed. Now, I feel like something else is better. That's being open-minded. Like, we can never be so attached to what we believed in the past. And in fact, I would say based on kind of the track record of me as an adult, let's say the last, I guess, 15 years since I've been 18, I would say I disagree with the vast majority of what I used to believe. Like as I've grown and like, I don't know if I've become wiser, but definitely learned different perspectives and other things. Like things,
everything but the GPL, right?
Yeah, everything but the GPL. Like, you know, lots of stuff that I used to feel very strongly about, now I believe to be more nuanced or maybe feel differently about. And we need to come into these discussions with the ability for a very good argument to change our mind. And that is, I would say, one of the hardest things to do in the world. And to the extent that people in WordPress were able to come into something with the genuine openness to have their minds changed, that would be pretty revolutionary. And I myself, we'll try to come into every discussion and I think do for the large part, but I will also aspire to do this even better, to come into these discussions. You know, I read these posts, anti-Gutenberg posts or whatever it is. I go into it thinking,
Gutenberg.
All right, like, what if this is right? I'm open to that. And all I ask is for everyone to approach things the same way.
I think that's fair. I can agree. Maybe this is just a thing about getting in out of your teens and 20s and into your 30s, or I don't know. But nuance is a good word in terms of evolving our own tightly held beliefs. So let's finish with, I want to hear, you travel the world, you see a lot of people, WordPress users and otherwise. What's something that's inspired you recently, WordPress, or maybe it's just a story that you've heard?
I'll say it a little bit in abstract because I don't know if this is a story that she shared publicly, but I met a woman who spoke to me about, she's now the CEO of a successful startup with tens of millions of dollars in funding, like doing very, very well. And having a big impact as well. You know, funding's not the best metric. Also, like, lots of people are using this product. And mm-hmm. she told me this story about how in you know, her background was not necessarily development or engineering. And but somehow she got a WordPress site. She started to basically learn how to code through doing that WordPress, like changing the HTML, modifying the theme, just doing like the kind of stuff. It's actually probably many, many stories within within the WordPress community, but then hit like a really interesting roadblock, which is her family went through some super tough times. So much so that, you know, they lost their jobs. Her family actually moved into her student housing with her. So, you know, imagine a family living together and like something designed for one student.
Wow.
And she was able to use, she kind of parlayed her WordPress skills into people paying her to develop WordPress-powered websites, you know, first a couple hundred dollars and it could be a couple grand. And that was what helped get her, it allowed her to, one, stay in college, which was very important because she obviously lost her financial support from her family at the same time, help her family get back on her feet, and was kind of a pivotal point for what she later created. You know, that could have just as easily gone the other direction. You know,
wow, that's really awesome. I wonder, I actually think that if you polled successful entrepreneurs, especially in the web space, I bet a lot of them have touched WordPress and been impacted in some way by WordPress over the years. So that's a really cool story to hear.
It's kind of amazing. If you look at even the founding of like Groupon or Airbnb, there's some WordPress at the very,
too.
Yeah, there's some WordPress at the very beginning, and those have been talked about publicly, but it's, it is very cool, and I love, you know, that's why I put HeroPress into the, you know, default feed, news feed for the dashboard, is I love what HeroPress does and the stories that they bring together, and it provides me a lot of inspiration. And that's something that, you know, it's good to keep in mind. Like, even though we might have some very, very strong disagreements as we develop this thing called WordPress, that end of the day, like, I think we all agree that when it impacts people's lives positively like that, it's really, really special. And to be able to, you know, like any contributor to WordPress can, you know, kind of tell your friends or your family or your future godchildren or grandchildren, like, I was part of that. I answered 1,000 things on the forums that allowed people to build that. Or, you know, I helped that documentation. Or I have code that runs on, actually, as of just yesterday, I don't know if you know this, but we're now 29% of the web. So
gotta love the new 1% that we get to tack on every now and then.
Yeah, past year we've grown another 2.something%, another Drupal. So I mean,
another Drupal.
If we look back over this past year, it's been very different, and there's been a lot of, I would say, you know, when I self-evaluate myself, like I could have done a much, much better job, and still want to do a better job around bringing everyone together around these things we're doing differently. But by a lot of the external metrics, it's been a really, really good year for WordPress. And these 4.8, 4.9 have had great adoption. They've had great downloads. The usage of WordPress is way up. We're getting just better outcomes for users, customers, everyone all around the world. And so we're on a good path. And in fact, it's actually starting to accelerate a bit, which is really, really important, because for a while, we were still growing, but not as fast as we had in the past. So reversing that trend, which it looks like we're going to do this year, is huge. I mean, that's basically pulling the plane out of the nosedive.
That's cool. Yeah, I actually just had a friend of mine ask me about being able to essentially draft the changes that she was making. She's a teacher, and she's building a WordPress website for their school with her students. And she was asking me about being able to draft those changes that they make before they go live. And I was like, well, lucky you. WordPress 4.9 is around the corner. So I'll be able to talk to her this week when I see her and let her know that all she has to do is update WordPress, and she's got that feature. So
it's definitely on my mind. I mean, this is the time of year when I'm putting together the state of the word. In fact, I'll give a plug for all the auspicious listeners of this podcast. If there's anything you think should be in the state of the word this year, drop me an email or a Slack ping, because this is going to be a meaty one, and I'm really excited about it. But it's also a nice opportunity to take a step back from the day to day, see like, oh, well, what have we actually done over since last time I got up in front of y'all in a suit and a tie, and it's been a good one. I'm actually really, really happy with how this has turned out. Although if you had asked me at certain points along the year, especially like when the whole, like maybe a little bit over the summer when Gutenberg slowed down a bit, we had the JavaScript stuff, I would have been like, oh my goodness, like what's going on?
Yeah, I agree. It's you've been doing this a long time, and I feel like I've been doing it a long time now. So sometimes it's definitely worth taking a step back and just looking at it. The ecosystem more broadly. I just had my local WordCamp a couple of weeks ago that I attended, and for the first time in a while, unfortunately, I hate to say that, spent some time in the like the user, what do they call that?
User track,
whatever. Yeah, not even the user track. Like you go help someone with some issue.
Oh yeah, like the happiness bar, genius bar.
Yeah, the happiness bar. I spent some time at the happiness bar, and it was extremely fulfilling being able to answer questions for people that. Are simple, if you will, like, you know, to us, but for them, it helps their business be found on the web and be, can have a direct impact on what they do and how they do it. So I was really rewarded by that. And I'll let you know, I was a little skeptical when this happened in core, but I talked to several people that showed up to WordCamp because they saw that the WordCamp Birmingham was happening, in their WordPress dashboard. So I think that'd be a great ad.
Cool. I've got some more things in mind for that. So I do think that we can definitely leverage software to bring the community together. But yeah, volunteering at those happiness bars is huge. And it's how I got my start. Like this is how this whole thing got started, was on the B2 forums. I was going to ask another question because I couldn't figure things out with B2. And I saw someone posted the question that I had already figured out. So even though I was very, very new to everything at that point, I was like, oh, I already knew this. So I just posted that answer. And that was kind of the beginning of the addiction to contributing to open source that, you know, I still have to this day.
Nice. Well, Matt, it was really good talking to you, and I look forward to seeing you in Nashville. I'm assuming you're planning on eating some barbecue, right?
And I'm looking forward to the hot chicken.
Yeah, I was about to say the hot chicken's where it's at. it's a couple of places that I've been there that's got some great hot chicken. So I'll see you in just a couple of weeks, and I appreciate you spending time with me today.
Sounds good. Thank you as well.